J.D. Miller, do you think you could tell me a little bit about Harry Schultz? I'm planning to do a book on Cajun music, and of course one chapter in it is going to be devoted, or at least, you know, a portion of it, to Harry Schultz, who I have heard from various people now has really brought back Cajun music after the war. I heard that it was almost dead until Harry Schultz came out with his Jolie Blonde. And so I would really like to hear something about him. I was wondering if you could, do you have any idea where he was from?
Well, Chris, I had the privilege of playing with Harry Schultz. We worked together on and off for about 3 years.
That was the latter part of
1936 until 1930, right about 40, actually. Yes. Harry was 8 months older than I was. And we were both youngsters. I like to think of those days, you know.
Can I ask you roughly what year you were born?
1922. And Harry, I might say this, and I think that anybody that has heard him will agree. He was one of the most fantastic and original type musicians that I have ever heard or seen, for the simple reason he had no formal music training, and he was a natural. And in all the time that I knew him and played with him, I have never seen him have a good instrument. The music that he did was on a poor, poor instrument, because Harry had a weakness, and that was whenever he wanted a dollar, he'd hock his fiddle, his guitar, his mandolin, and anything else. So consequently, when he needed to play a dance, he'd go borrow something, and people knowing Harry wouldn't loan him a good instrument. They always loaned him their second instrument or something that wasn't too good. But even with these instruments that most other guys couldn't play at all, Harry did a fantastic job of playing. You can listen to his records, and he, of course, when you hear Jolie Blonde, he's immediately, everybody thinks of Harry Schultz. That is, people away from here. Of course, that's an old folk tune, a Cajun number, and I introduce you to the man that originally wrote it and originally recorded it. But really, Harry made the big hit out of it. It was such a hit that he was requested to go on the Grand Ole Opry, and that's something very unusual for a record you might class as international, even though it is here in Louisiana. It was in a foreign language, and it sold all over the southern part of the United States, even though it was in French or Cajun.
What instrument did you play in this group?
I played guitar.
Where did you tour with them? Do you remember?
Well, we didn't tour. We worked right out of Crowley here. No. At that time, you had a number of little local bands that played locally, I'd say within a radius of 100 miles. And we were playing with a group called the... I had my own group. He played with me first. We called ourselves the Original Ramblers. And then we played with the Original Aces, which was formerly known as the Four Aces. And, of course, they had made records. And prior to playing with...
Did that have anything to do with Leo Swallow and his Four Aces?
Yes. Well, Leo had originally started the Four Aces. And that was before I moved to Crowley. I moved here, as I said, in 37.
Mm. Where did you come from?
Lake Charles, yes. And Harry, I believe the first group that he played here for a very short period of time was with Happy Fats and the Rainbow Ramblers. Mm. That's where I heard him first.
Yeah.
And he just stayed with them a very few weeks, and then he came to work for me.
But, I mean, he was born around here?
He was born in Gaydon, a little town... I'm sorry, it's not Gaydon, it's Abbeville. A little town about 35, 38 miles from here.
Somebody told me he was actually of German origin.
Yes, he was.
And learned French, is that right?
Yes. Harry Schultz, as strange as it may seem, you hear him on all these Cajun records, he couldn't speak French. He'd sing it, but he couldn't speak it. I've... taking note on his record. There's a person other than him as the writer, and of course, even he didn't write that. I was one of the persons that helped him learn a tune, and certainly I didn't teach him how to sing it because I can't speak French myself. But with my band is when he learned Jolie Blonde, and I saw the writer credits on his record being given to some individual. I don't even know who they are. But actually, that song was not written by Harry Schultz, which a lot of people believed. And it was not originally recorded by him. But I'll say this, he had the most popular record of it. Certainly, it spread out more than any other. I understand that when it was originally recorded by Mayday Bro or the Bro Brothers, that it was a real big record, but just in the immediate vicinity of the Cajun country. But Harry's record broke out all over the country, especially in the southern part of the United States.
When did he first form his own group? Do you
remember? Well, now, there wasn't a great deal I knew about Harry before I met him, and not a lot that I could learn. You see, he was an orphan. Mm-hmm. He didn't know his mother or father. And Harry, as a youngster, played in saloons, bar rooms. At that time, you really didn't have clubs. It was either a saloon, a bar room, or a dance hall, one of the three. But he'd go in there, and he'd play for tips. And he played the fiddle. He played the guitar, which you hear very little of his guitar playing and very little of his mandolin playing. And he was, as I say, one of the greatest, one of the fastest electric guitar players I've ever seen, and I've seen a good many of them. And, of course, you can hear his fiddling, and he certainly excels at his type work there. And he didn't only play French. He played good country, good hillbilly. And but the strangest part about him is that even though he sang all those songs, he never could talk French.
When did, you know, I'm coming to think of the record, but when did you start your first label? When did you make your first?
That was in 1946. Happy Fats was my first artist. We cut our first records over in New Orleans. It was Cosmo Studio at that time, and of course Cosmo still has a studio there, but it was a very small thing. The room, I would venture to say, was probably no larger than 10 by 12, the studio. And we cut some French. I suppose that probably you heard the record Kalinda that has been recorded a number of times. Well, we cut the original recording on that. It was by Happy Fats and Doc Guidry. Mm-hmm. Since then, of course, Jimmy Davis has recorded it and mm-hmm. other artists, and it's
you,
done
you
quite
never
well.
Record Harry Schultz. Did he go off to Houston to live there?
Yes, well, Harry went off and was working Austin, Fort Worth. My wife and I were going through some of our little home phonograph discs mm-hmm. the other day, and we found some, but they apparently were next to one another, and they're just spoiled. Yeah. But I used to get Harry to come over to the house, and we would play, just he and I, guitar and fiddle, and certainly was hopeful that I'd be able to keep these discs, but mm-hmm. we can't even play them now. Yeah. They were the paper wax type, you see. And so much to my disappointment, I don't have those. I can't listen to them.
Was Bill Quinn already going when you started your label?
Oh, no, I don't think he was. To my knowledge, he wasn't. No. Now, perhaps he was, but Harry, I hadn't seen him in quite some time. Harry liked to drink. He loved to drink, and I believe I could safely say that Harry drank at least a quart of whiskey, a quart of something every day. And he was a very good boy. He'd do anything for me. Of course, I believe that there was a good reason for that. I'd do anything for him. He'd get in trouble, and I'd go get him out of jail. I got him out of jail many a time. He He was probably what you'd say his own worst enemy. He was a very good boy. You couldn't depend on him. I know very often when he was working in my group, as well as in the other group that both of us were working in, we were left without a musician, and 9 out of 10 times it was Harry. But he was just so good, you didn't want to fire him, that's all. I mean, he was such an asset to any group. And
somebody, Joe Falcone, told me that at that time in the during the war, that Cajun music was pretty much almost, non-existent. People just didn't really care much for it until that Harry Schultz record came out. What do you think?
I think that did a lot towards reviving it. Of course, there were very few people actually promoting and recording French music. I didn't start until, as I say, I believe it was 45, wasn't it? Right? And the reason I did it, Chris, I really, it was a hobby. It started as a hobby with me. And we had so many demands from jukebox operators and the public for French records which weren't available. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when Jolie Blonde came out, well, that made us realize there was some potential in recording that. And I started, and of course others started. Eddie Shula started. And they had a fella from Dallas, I believe, that would come through here and record some of them, different ones. Anyway, we started getting French records on the market again. And thereby, I believe that we probably created more interest in it, but it was it's rather hard for me, and I'm sure for anyone else, to explain about Harry Schultz. He was just a real great musician.
When did you see him last?
The last time I saw Harry was not long before he died, or rather, he was beat to death in jail. You know, that's the way he died. Very sad way of dying. And I often think back, and I remember distinctly one time when I went over and got him out of jail, and I was real mad at him, and I said, you know what, if you don't quit that, you're going to die in jail. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Of course, I didn't really believe that, but that's what happened. But it was very, very sad. And
Was he taking heroin or just marijuana? Somebody said he was on...
Now, that I don't know. I couldn't say. I have never seen Harry do anything but drink plenty. Frankly speaking, I don't believe that he did, but I don't know. And the last time I saw him, he came through here shortly before he was beat to death in jail, came to my music store, and I wasn't there. And so he told the person working there that... to tell me when I'd come in. He was at the bar, just a few doors down, that I could find him there. So when I came in, I went over to see him, and he showed me the letter he had gotten, requested him to go to the Grand Ole Opera. And I tried to talk him into going, and he said he was going to go, but he never did. Of course, he was very carefree. And then When he did get killed, they didn't have any money to bury him. And Gordon Baxter, a DJ from Port Arthur, Texas, picked up money over there, and I picked it up in Louisiana, and we buried Harry Schultz. And with this LP that I have, Tribute to Harry Schultz, so much is being put aside on each LP, and we're going to buy him a headstone, something other than what he's got. For a long time, he had no stone at all. I understand that since then, they have put one of these military stones on his grave, and I wasn't even aware of the fact that he had gone to the service.
Was he buried in Austin?
No, he's buried in Port Arthur. And he has a son over there that's just finishing school, too. I spoke with him over the phone. And frankly speaking, I didn't, I wasn't aware of that son. He's got a son and a daughter. Daughter lives in Alexandria. I talked with the youngster. He seemed to be a real fine kid. And he told me that he was going to finish school this year. And he spoke very intelligently.
Is Jimmy Schultz, or who's Jimmy Schultz?
No, that's really, I don't know. I don't know the relationship. Harry always told me he didn't have any family there. But Jimmy says he's his cousin, and perhaps he is. I don't know. But really, Harry didn't know too much about himself. I remember one time that a certain individual had brought Harry into jail for not paying his board. And he looked older than he was. And I remember that we went to a little church by Abbeville, and we finally dug up his birth certificate, baptism papers, and we found that he was a minor, you see. And of course that it threw the whole thing out. But until then, I don't really think that he knew exactly how old he was himself, because he had no, hardly any schooling at all. And do we have a, have you ever seen him, seen
a picture of
him? Yeah.
The one that Bill Quinn had, has him standing with a big grin on his face.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever
But he was real interesting. When Harry always looked so filthy. That was one of the things about him. He didn't, he just didn't believe in taking a bath. And he'd wear his clothes until you just couldn't put up with it anymore. Fact is, my home, when he'd come there, my mother wouldn't let him in the house until he took a bath in the garage. So that's another thing about Harry. But again, I say he was probably his own worst enemy. He didn't care. He was always having a good time. If he had something to drink, he had a real good time. And I never did see him around the girls. To an extent, you know what I mean? His good time was his music and his drink.
Bill Quinn told me he used to try to fool, I guess, with Joe Manuel or somebody. Married. There was a girl in the band.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, when I met him in that saloon last time I saw him, he introduced me to her as his wife.
Yeah.
Well, he knew that I knew her. I mean, he should have known. But to actually run around with women.
Yeah. What did she play in that band?
Piano. She made the record with him.
Do you remember who the other guys were in that band?
Honey, you know where that picture is, or did Abe get it?
You mean Joe Manuel was the girl. She was the piano player.
No, that was Johnny.
Well, Johnny was
her name. Her name was Johnny. She was married to Joe Manuel.
Uh-huh.
She was married to the brother of the man that's coming here tonight.
Uh-huh.
Now, he committed suicide later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had pictures of the band then. Harry always wore his clothes. It was too large for him. Never did fit him. His coat was about three sizes too large. His sleeves too long. He looked, I would say, less like a musician than probably anyone else I've ever met. And you wouldn't think that he was, much less the caliber of musician he was. But he was really great. Now he could grab that fiddle and grab a guitar and play Stardust or play anything you want. He was just a born musician. But he is buried there in Port Arthur. I have the information. Mm-hmm. I had Rufus Thibodeau go over there and get it for me.
What are his kids' names?
I'm sorry, Chris. I don't remember. I had it written down, and I believe it's at my office. But I called the youngster. His daughter is in Alexandria. His wife is remarried. Of course, I really don't know which one it is. Every time I'd see him with a woman, it was a wife. And I don't know, because on the dance job, you never see Harry leave the stand and go go talk to a woman or go have anything to drink. But every time I would meet him, he had a new wife. So I don't really know how it came about, but nevertheless.
What became of Johnny? Is she still around?
I asked Abe about her, and I understand she's married to some engineer that works at Los Alamos Proving Grounds over there. Yeah. Now, when Abe comes in, he'll probably give you more information.
Okay.
You want to mark this down?
Okay.
I'll never forget the first time that really we had a big joke because of Harry Schultz. I had met him, I believe, once before, and this particular day we had gone to Lafayette. It was Mardi Gras. And at that time there was a band from Port Arthur, I take it back, it was from Beaumont, called the Texas Wanderers, which was the most popular string band that I believe had ever hit this country. And Cliff Bruner was one of the greatest violin players, fiddle players, or what have you. And everybody looked at him. He just fascinated all the musicians. Of course, the whole lot of us was somewhat backwards compared to these boys. Well, anyway, friends, we had several groups of musicians met. Were out. It was a street dance there. And we were several groups of musicians, different bands, discussing that. And I had a friend of mine over at, that played fiddle from Abbeville. And strangely enough, he didn't know a thing about Harry Schultz. Because he came over and asked us, he asked Doc Gidry. He said, "Doc, who's that little fella playing the fiddle there?" He was just so fascinated. This guy played so much fiddle. So Doc told him that was Cliff Bruner's little brother, and he fell for it hook, line, and sinker, and we got a big charge of that. Every time I see this guy, I remind him about that. And he turned out to be a real good musician himself, but I don't think he's quite ever forgiven us for telling him that was Cliff Bruner's little brother, because he really believed it, you know. That's it. I thought it was a rather cute incident. He was just so fascinated like the rest of us.
Shatter.
No, I didn't know him as a child. I knew him for, we were childs then, but he was a grown child.
Oh. When did you first, could you just give us your name so I'd know who you
are? My name is Abe Manuel.
And when did you first meet Harry Schultz?
My gosh, I met Harry Schultz, I guess, back in 34, 35. Yeah.
Where was that?
We was in Basile, playing with Leo Swallow and the Rhythm Boys. It's been a long time.
I believe you got your names fixed up.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It was...
If you remember, when Harry Schultz came here, he played with Rainbow Ramblers first.
Yeah, that's right.
That was in 37.
Yeah.
That was in 37. Then he came to work for me, he jumped from band to band.
That's right. Yeah, it was. Because we were living right by the schoolhouse then, in 38 or 39. And he was living at the house after he left the Rainbow Ramblers and y'all.
He jumped from...
He came with us, yeah. But he was great then.
He was already a good fiddler when he first met
him. Oh, man, he was fabulous.
That's what I was telling Chris. And Abe, did you ever hear him on a good instrument? On a good instrument?
Well, I've heard him play on stuff that we'd throw away, and it sounded like stuff that Chet Atkins would love to get his hands on. I mean, he was the greatest, without a doubt. That's... He had a three-finger deal that he did. It was a trick, but I've tried it a lot of times, and I can almost get to where I can understand what he did. But he'd pick, he'd card with three fingers and pick with one.
On a fiddle?
On a guitar, mostly. And he'd shake hands with the other hand and talk while he's playing.
He used the fourth finger as a picking
finger. As a picking finger. And he did, I mean, it was great work. As far as fiddle and his style of fiddling, there's nobody that can get to him. We all try to copy him because he was great. And he was a fine pianist.
Was that like a
good pianist? Oh, gosh, yeah, man. He played fine piano. Mm-hmm. Bass fiddle.
Well, of course, when I knew him, I never did hear him play piano. I never did hear him play bass, but he played mandolin, guitar, and fiddle. He was a great.
As far as the lead instruments, he was without a doubt the greatest that's ever been in this part of the country. Mm-hmm. And he was the greatest that I've ever worked with.
Me too. And you know, for 3 years, he and I worked together off and on. You know Harry, he never stayed with anybody.
He wouldn't stay nowhere.
Well, where did you work together with him?
With Harry?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I played all over Louisiana with Harry and in Texas.
What instrument did you play?
I was playing rhythm guitar at the time.
And do you remember any of the particular places where you guys played this, all these dance songs all over?
Oh my gosh, man. It would take an hour to go through that. We played it well all around this. From Lafayette on up to Orange, Texas. Mm-hmm. There isn't a joint that we didn't go play. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew Harry. Everybody liked him.
Were you with him when he made his first record, or was it?
I was playing with the band when he recorded Jolie Blonde, but I was not on the recording. I was not on the session.
How did you happen to get in touch with Bill Quinn?
That's something that I don't really know. The only man I think that knew that is deceased now too. I don't know of anybody that knows how he got with Quinn.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Quinn about that.
Quinn knows, yeah. He'd know.
Mm-hmm. Well, any kind of anecdotes you could tell us about him, or any kind of particular remembrances you have with him? Particularly events? That's drinking a lot.
There's a lot.
But you couldn't tell.
I couldn't tell some of them. No. He was a lover of nature. He was a lover of music, mostly. Mm. Now, when I say music, I mean a wide range. Mm-hmm. He loved anything that was music-wise, from way down to the corniest. Yeah. I mean the corniest corn that you could shuck on up to Long Harrod, and he could play that too. Mm-hmm. I remember the time we were in the Showboat in Orange. That was, I guess, 46. Mm-hmm. And Tex Beneke, mm-hmm, with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, mm-hmm, offered him a job. And Harry told him, he says, well, man, I can't read. Mm-hmm. And Tex said, well, man, you don't have to read. He says, I want to hire you to play, not read. And he played long-haired music just as easily as he played Jolie Blonde. It didn't make no
difference. How did he happen to pick on that Cajun music? Do you know anything about that? You
know, that's what he felt. He's a Frenchman. And he felt that he was raised.
Was he a Frenchman? Somebody said he was of some other descent, because you said he didn't really speak
French. He was a German, but he was raised in Abbeville. You can't be raised more French than that. That explains the problem. But his father was a German. And of course, his mother, I don't know. I had a copy of the birth certificate.
She's French.
Well, I don't know.
French?
But yeah, I was telling Chris, the amazing thing to me, and I played with Harry 3 years, and I believe that I got him out of jail more than anybody else.
I think you did.
He could sing these French songs, terrific, but he couldn't speak French. Now, like I told you, I could stand to be corrected, because there was a period of time after we played together that Abe and some of the others played. Now, did he ever learn to really speak French?
No.
And that was the most amazing thing about him, because you listen to his records. Of course, I don't understand it, but everybody else that speaks French understands it, and they appreciate it. And that, to me, was the most amazing thing.
Did he play French music already before he made that record?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
He played mostly French music.
No. His range was from...
Very broad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the broadest. He had the broadest range in music of anybody I've ever known.
Playing honky-tonks, he's playing anywhere.
He played all kinds of music.
Now, he's the type of fella now...
But I mean, after he made that record, he pretty much stuck to just the Cajun music?
Oh, yeah. Then, uh-huh. But he played in a Rice Hotel in Houston, and...
Well, I believe, Abe, what you mean is this, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I really believe because of the impact of Jolie Blonde, that's where he's shone.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You understand? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But actually, his love wasn't necessarily French, mm-hmm. but he played it so well. Now, he learned Jolie Blonde when he was playing with the Four Aces.
Right.
That's when he learned. I was playing with him.
Yeah, right. Leo Swallow's group?
Yeah.
I helped. Well, Leo wasn't playing.
No, it was you and Harry and...
I said the Four Aces. We call ourselves the Original Aces because we had over four, you see.
Yeah, but it was you and
Bill Landry, Huffy.
And Huffy, yeah.
And Popeye, you know. That's right.
But to him... You'd start whistling Old MacDonald, and he'd get on and he'd play and make it sound like...
He had his own style of doing it.
He was quite a versatile musician.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was very versatile. It didn't make any difference what you'd play. He could do more with anything than anybody I've ever seen.
The most fantastic musician I've ever worked with. They have nothing to work with.
There is no five men around here put together. I mean, the cream of the crop. Pick them. Put them together. There is no five men put together that can do what he could do.
I agree with you.
I mean, he was a fine showman. Mm-hmm. He was a fine fiddler. He was more than a Hank Williams in the hillbilly field to me, always. And he was a down-to-earth old boy. Nothing excited him.
I didn't even look like a musician. No. Would you pick Harry for a musician?
He looked more like a wrestler. Wrestler or boxer, old pug.
He was rather frail, but he was rough in a certain way. And Abe, as I was telling Chris, time we played, he actually always had plenty of women, but I never did see him during intermission. I never did see him go meet a woman to buy a drink. I never did see him bring one to the dance.
No.
But yet that seemed to have been his downfall to a great extent. I don't know.
Well, now you played the with women
him.
Went
did
for
you
him.
Did you ever see him?
Women went for him, like you said.
Did you ever see him actually go out and chase the women?
I've never seen him. I've never heard of him ask a woman for a date.
I have never seen it either.
Came after him.
They come after him. He was that kind of guy. And uglier than he was homemade soap, I guess.
That's the damn truth.
And sloppy. But
you know about his clothes. I don't have to tell you about his clothes.
Yeah, he'd wear yours and mine.
and they were always too big. Am I right or wrong?
Always too big.
Fact is, one time, I failed to tell you, Chris, one time he went to the barber shop. And Harry was this type. Look, he went in a barber shop and purposely come out with another man's coat, and he bragged about it. Boy, this is a lot better coat than I went in with. You know, he was that type guy. Now,
he wasn't a thief.
He didn't think he was stealing.
Yeah, like he
but he just figured the other guy
swapped.
Was...
He just swapped.
He just got it, yeah.
Kid, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
He was living out of the Lake Charles in an old torn-down shack there. He had a wife.
Did he run the place in
Quincy Davis?
Quincy Davis.
He owned a club there. He started off with the old Avalon Club in Basile.
On Basile.
And then he moved from there and went up and had the old hilltop.
Manhattan.
Well, it was a hilltop to start off.
Yeah, well, probably.
Then he goes
Manhattan,
to Manhattan,
yeah.
Later. And then the Fusiliers, Herb and then bought him out.
Yeah.
And they kept the Manhattan in.
But he had Harry where he couldn't do a thing. He owed him. And I don't remember exactly how much it was I paid Quincy. It wasn't a great deal because for some reason either Quincy made a mistake or somebody else did. It was probably $10 or $15. But nevertheless, I thought that perhaps we could help him because I like Harry. I've got some
mad at him. Well, he was the most likable fellow you ever met.
But I'll say this.
He'd pull some of the darnest boners right there in your face, and 15 minutes later, you'd do anything for him.
I will say this. Now, I've dealt with a lot of musicians, and I'd be so interested to know and curious to know. Now, he was 8 months older than I was. If that boy lived, what he'd be doing today? Wouldn't you? What kind of music that boy would be playing?
Well, I'll tell you now, we figure we're too old to change. But him, he wouldn't have to change. Anything they're playing right now, what the Beatles in England play, he could have played that.
Now?
The first time he'd have heard it, he'd have played it, just like they play, or better.
Now, Abe, we discussed earlier Rufus, and I believe you know that Rufus is one of my, I like him probably more, certainly as much as any other musician I've ever met. And I think very highly of him. I don't think there's anybody else in the business could cut an album like he cut. And I would say this, that Rufus can play anything that Harry Schultz could play. But first, Harry Schultz would have to play it. Rufus does not originate anything, but Harry Schultz would originate anything. Am I right?
Motion fully.
Now, Rufus can play it, but he will not think it up.
He will not
originate it.
That's right.
Now, there's nobody, and even Harry Schultz couldn't play closer to Harry Schultz than Rufus does. Am I right or wrong?
That's right.
But in order for Rufus to do it, Harry Schultz has to do it. But Harry Schultz would originate his own style, which he did, and the only reason that it hasn't been carried through as much as it has, or as much as we would like it to be, is for the simple reason that so few guys can play it. The only man that I know can play it is Rufus Thibodeau. Certainly that's why we put him on the LP.
And me.
Do you agree with me, Doc?
For non-support or something about support. Mm-hmm. And, we went by Jesse James out of Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. Adolph Hoffner and myself went by and saw Harry while he was in, and we brought him cigarettes and clothes. And they had him in a cell. I don't really remember how it was. But they went to move him from one cell to another. And the old man in these jails, you know how they got them old jailers, they don't pay them much money, so they get them old men that can't do nothing else. Mm-hmm. And the old man was scared of Harry. Well, you know, Harry talked
when he
like
get,
he was
when
rough,
he get,
man.
When he get drunk, he was mean.
Yeah. But but he wasn't wrong. He'd been in jail 3 or 4 weeks in. And the old man went to move Harry from one cell to another. And he handcuffed him in the back. And Harry died with convulsions of the liver or something. And Jesse James had him exhumed. He had the body dug up. They went through a heck of a lot. He spent a lot of money. And they found out that his skull was fractured in 3 different places. And then it all came out then.
They'd beat him.
Yeah, but with the butt of a gun. The old man said, well, Harry was going to kill him or beat him. Now, how in the hell are you going to beat a man up when both of your hands is handcuffed in the back? Mm-hmm. Well, we saw where the cuff marks was on his arms. They tried to hide that, but you can't. Those things couldn't be hidden. I mean, it was. Mm-hmm. After he got on the floor, I imagine he's like a chicken with his head cut off. He was fighting, trying to catch his breath or something, but I mean, it showed on his arms where his arm was blistered with those cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But the old boy that did it is not going to do that no more where he's at. He's there for a long time. But he did get killed. It was not his liver that killed him. And he was not drunk. He had been in jail over 3 weeks. I don't remember exactly how long he'd been in jail, but it's...